Every Thursday night, you ask the questions, DT gives you his answers. No holds barred.
It's Q&A with Don Tony. This is your chance to speak your mind and be heard about anything.
Q&A with Don Tony. And now, your host, Don Tony.
Hey, what's going on, everyone? Don Tony here. Welcome to your latest Q&A episode for Monday, September 4th, 2023. I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning into this episode, supporting what I do. Keep downloading all the episodes at DonTony.com. That keeps me in business. That keeps me relevant, which is very, very important if we're going to continue to pay the bills and remain active. I want to thank everybody who sent in questions for this episode. And remember, these Q&As, right now they're averaging about once a month, but these Q&As are open to everyone. You have the opportunity to submit a question. I always post a thread in the community section over at YouTube on my channel, youtube.com/DonTony. And the reason why I put it there is because it's visible for everybody. Whether you're a channel member, a subscriber, a lurker, everybody gets an opportunity to submit a question. And as I always say on these shows, if you're going to submit multiple questions, keep it more in a rapid fire format, because we want to keep the flow going. And, you know, I appreciate the support, but we can't spend 20, 30 minutes on one person's questions, obviously. So without further ado, let's get into this episode. And we're going to talk about Bray Wyatt and Terry Funk right off the bat. Two questions that came in. One is maybe a little bit controversial, and I'm going to open with that one first. Mike from L.A. Now, I don't know if that's Los Angeles or Louisiana, but Mike says, DT, several podcasters are calling it reckless for anyone to say that the vest would have likely saved Bray Wyatt's life. Since you seem to be the only one that took a dive into this vest, it feels like that some are specifically coming after you. Your thoughts? Well, Mike, I'm very curious who these people are that are calling it reckless. I don't know if they're doing it for an emotional reaction or ignorance. And I don't want to criticize anybody out there, but I will say this. Anybody that calls it reckless have either not taken the time to do the research about the vest, you know, whether they just didn't know where to look, or maybe they just didn't care. Or these are people out there that are just ignorant, just, you know, making emotional statements without backing anything up. I promise you, if I'm going to make a statement like that, especially since the guy passed away, you best damn believe I did my research first. And that's why I even brought up on Monday, Zoll, Z-O-L-L. That is the number one manufacturer of the cardiac life vest. And if you go to their website, lifevest.zoll.com, the very first thing that you will read is that during use of the vest, as long as you wear it, overall acute survival was 99.2%. If you go to the Cleveland Clinic, which would be the first Google result if you search this, the question is asked, what is the success rate for the life vest? Researchers found the life vest has a 99% success rate for treating ventricular fibrillation occurrences. I mean, nothing will prevent death 100%. When it's our time to go, it's our time to go. But when his death is directly related to his heart condition and the doctor prescribes him that vest, and scientific studies say that there is a 99% success rate when you have a heart issue, well, you know, how do you make the claim that it's reckless then? Yeah, just do the research. Do the research. For anybody out there calling it reckless, they are extremely naive, or they're just trying to trigger emotional reactions from people. Believe me, I thought very, very long and hard, should I make the claim that the vest would have likely saved his life? Once you start doing the research, and you see 99%, I mean, come on. It's not even an argument. So I'm very curious who these people are. But honestly, I don't care what other people are saying out there. I did my research. I made my claims. And I think, you know, people that have half a brain that tune into the shows know, you know, what I said is accurate. It's a shame. This guy should not have passed away at 36 years old. It sucks. I mean, it sucks. You know, we would have had easily another 5 to 10 years of Bray Wyatt, you know, if he didn't have these problems. And as I said on Monday, there was no guarantee that he would have even been able to return to the wrestling ring. We don't know. But the point is, even if you would have been forced into retirement, there's so many things he could have done in the world of pro wrestling, and he still would have been with us. But thank you very much for that question. I appreciate it. John from California is asking, DT, what is your favorite all-time Bray Wyatt match and favorite all-time Terry Funk match? For me, and it's funny because I've been a fan of Terry Funk going back to the 80s. He's been my number one favorite wrestler since the mid-80s. I've seen hardcore matches. I've seen matches that are just complete psychology. I've seen something in the middle. I've seen the WCW, NWA, ECW, Japan, WWE, MLW, XPW, just goes on and on and on. For me, though, the one that is held up that I still enjoy watching and it's got that shelf life is the I Quit match against Ric Flair at Clash of the Champions 9, New York Knockout. It just told a beautiful story. Not only did it tell a beautiful story, but the storyline, the feud to lead up to this match was incredible. And it was controversial. I mean, Terry Funk said a lot of things that pissed off Ric Flair. Terry Funk put a freaking trash bag over Ric Flair's head and tried to suffocate him to death, which standards and practices were very, very livid about. I mean, you know, it just... That match was the culmination of an awesome feud. They had matches before. They've had matches after. That match, for me, is it. As far as Bray Wyatt, though, you know, one is not necessarily a match. But, you know, the interesting thing about it is, although I said over the weekend in my tribute show that I believe his greatest rival of all time is Randy Orton, my two favorite matches for Bray Wyatt of all time involved John Cena. WWE Payback from 2014, him and John Cena had a banger of a match. For Bray Wyatt standards, it was tremendous. I mean, there was a lot of, you know, interference. The Usos got involved, the Wyatts got involved, but still, I really enjoyed that match. I still think that Randy Orton was the stronger feud, but that match with John Cena, I really, really enjoyed. And the cinematic match for WrestleMania. It was like a psychological roller coaster. It just, you know, I remember Kevin and I doing a WrestleMania recap, and we were having a little debate, you know, which match did we like more, AJ Styles versus The Undertaker or Bray Wyatt versus John Cena? Kev chose Undertaker Styles. I chose Wyatt Cena. And as I said last week, neither one of us were right, and neither one of us were wrong. But I just love creativity. There was so much creative input for that match. And I think Bray only did two moves the entire match. It was just creative. It was wild. It was a psychological high for me. So it's a choice between those two. I mean, the Payback match obviously was your more traditional match. WrestleMania was cinematic. I mean, let's be honest. So, but thank you for that. Kevin from Milwaukee, Goldust's theme was an absolute work of art. I always liked it. As I've gotten older, I began to see in a whole new light. The melody sounds like a progressionary message of importance in a dreamlike state. What do I think? Kevin, honestly, to me, it felt like a dramatic song from Hollywood. You know, when he first did the vignettes, it was all about Hollywood. And the song sounded like a Hollywood, like real serious theme that you would see in a dramatic movie. And I've always felt that way. It has not changed. I did like the variations, though, when he was having Luna Vachon with him and he was the artist formerly known as Goldust. Believe it or not, the artist formerly known as Goldust theme, I enjoy more than the original Goldust theme. It was just weird, distorted. And I remember when, you know, I used to collect wrestling theme music before, you know, the actual version became available. You know, we would trade themes with other people, and the best version that we ever had was somebody who recorded it live and tried to cut out all the fan noise in the background. It's a work of art, and it fit the character perfectly. And it's still a great song for a wrestler. Yeah, I hope we do hear it one more time in the WWE. Goldust, obviously, AEW, and I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. But I think one day we will hear that music again in WWE. James Campbell, how do I feel about the idea of bringing back general managers? It ran its course in 09, but it seems like a good time to bring them back. I absolutely agree. I think authoritative figures are needed. Adam Pearce does a great job. I tell you, for a long time, up until he was doing stuff with Sonya Deville, for a long time, like, I just felt like, you know, this guy just suddenly appeared and became sort of like an authority figure, but they never really said, you know, what he was other than management. I enjoyed the GMs over the years. Teddy Long was tremendous. Mick Foley was good. Eric Bischoff was, you know, really, you know, surprisingly good. I think Eric Bischoff doesn't get enough credit for him as a GM. Stephanie was okay. You know, when she got into that, you know, that phase where she was really showing off her assets, you know, it got a little bit over the top. But there's been so many GMs over the years. I think AEW needs an authority figure. I think if William Regal would have never left AEW, he would have been the perfect GM. He would have come out there, two people are feuding, they're having words, and he comes out there and says, you know what, get us a referee. You know, little things like that. And I never liked Cody's original explanation. Anybody remember when Cody was in AEW in the early stages and someone asked him, like, how come you don't have like a GM character figure on TV? And Cody said that, you know, fans, you know, would know that the GM doesn't really have power. And that's fine and everything, but I've always countered it by saying, Cody, you know, when you're fighting someone in a ring, you're not actually like punching them in the face. You're actually simulating violence. So if you're simulating violence and we know that it's not, you know, I hate to use the term real, but you know what I mean, then why can't someone be a GM? George Ford, is it me, DT, or a majority of AEW's matches ending with a confused ref or outside interference? Oh, yeah. It's been like that for 4 years. It's just, you know, no DQs, obviously. Very, 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 very rare. What is it, like once a year? We get like a DQ victory. You know, look, when you relax the rules, you make it easier creatively to book a match. Just let people do whatever the fuck they want. You know, and for some people, you listen, I'm not going to criticize AEW because the best way I could describe it is this. You ever play a video game? All right, does anybody remember Game Genie? Does anybody remember that from the 90s, Game Genie? Game Genie, when you used to use the device, you can actually like manipulate a game where you have infinite lives. If you die, that's okay. You still continue the game. And you would play like the hardest games and you wouldn't have to worry about being frustrated that you would have to start all over again because the game would allow you to just keep playing, keep playing, keep playing. With AEW, the rules are relaxed. So you could just go on and on and on and do your thing and the match isn't cut abruptly short because a referee calls for a disqualification. You know, I think some video games are the most fun when you have like infinite lives, or you don't have to worry about, you know, a game ending, you know, because you don't play it all that well. I mean, it gets a little bit tiresome, George. You know, when everything is a clusterfuck, nothing is a clusterfuck. I don't think people have noticed, but AEW's kind of pulled back a little bit with their blood, which is very, very smart, because when there's blood pretty much every week, blood doesn't really feel like it matters all that much. Yeah, it's funny. I just thought of it from the 80s when Roddy Piper, you know, Hulk Hogan had a tiny little drip of blood on his chest when Andre the Giant pulled his chain off, and when Roddy Piper said, "You're bleeding." I mean, it became iconic, and all it was just a little speck of blood, but just the visual of Andre ripping the chain off the cross, you know, it was more of some symbolism than anything else. So, all right, shout out to Roderick Howard. Got a bunch of questions, a little rapid fire. When will we see Dom and Ray again? I don't think we're going to see that really, other than maybe like some house shows when they want to spice it up a little bit. I don't think we're going to see them cross paths again at WrestleMania. Them interacting in NXT recently when Dom was in the Ray was in the corner of Dragon Lee was great. But the thing is, you know, there's no reason right now to cross paths. I was thinking about it the other day. It would have been cool to see a Judgment Day versus Bloodline feud. And if we would have saw the Judgment Day maybe show up on SmackDown a little bit, you know, maybe Ray could have gotten into it with Dom again. But I don't see it happening anytime soon. And no, I don't see Dom and Ray having any type of Cody Roman build. Ray is at the tail end of his career, and, you know, Dom is doing his own thing, and it's going to stay that way. Do I see any women in WWE not named Bianca Belair as legitimate options to dethrone Rhea Ripley for the title? Right now, no. I mean, Raquel Rodriguez, I hope they have the feud for a few months, because Raquel can actually go. I don't think we've seen everything that she can do, you know, on the main roster. And, you know, Raquel and Rhea Ripley, you know, as far as size-wise, you know, they match up really, really well. Right now, there's nobody on the Raw roster that I could see reason to take the title off of Rhea Ripley. Not even Becky, not even Shayna Baszler. Right now, I say leave it as it is. How do I feel about Adam Cole turning heel on MJF and winning the world title, you know, whether it's All In or another event itself? I don't like the idea. Adam Cole had a beautiful story coming back to pro wrestling. And, you know, it is a great story. And MJF is 10, 100, 1,000 times better as a heel than Adam Cole is. Adam Cole, you know, is more, listen, he is genuinely a good guy. I'm not saying that MJF's not a good guy. I mean, outside of wrestling, a lot of people think that MJF is an asshole. We don't know how much of that is real and how much of that is character. But with Adam Cole, it's much easier to use him as a babyface. That doesn't mean that Adam Cole wouldn't be a good heel. But him turning on MJF, I say no. Nope. Not now. Not anytime soon. After seeing Junkyard Dog's Dark Side of the Ring, how do I think his career would have turned out if he didn't go to the WWF, if he would have stayed in Mid-South or WCW? Could he have filled the number two babyface void after Magnum's accident? If Junkyard Dog would have kept himself in shape, I think he absolutely would have been one of the top baby faces in WCW. You know, when you go to the early 90s and you think of Sting and eventually Davey Boy Smith came in, there was a bunch of baby faces that all seemed to be on the same level. Sting very quickly broke out into his own, you know, he just went to the main, you know, the top. Junkyard Dog, though, never had the in-ring repertoire to have like a 20, 30-minute classic. And when Ric Flair was pretty much having a stranglehold on that championship, yeah, there could have been a Dusty Rhodes type of victory for the Junkyard Dog maybe once. But Junkyard Dog, I don't think, would have been suited well to be like one of the main eventers and a number two babyface for the company. Great compliment for the roster, but no. Even if he would have stood in WCW, he would probably would have been popularity-wise, you know, a notch below, you know, some of the main eventers. And I use Sting as an example because everybody knows Sting. Who has the bigger upside, Carmelo Hayes or Trick Williams? Honestly, Carmelo Hayes, I think, has the better upside because of the look. It's, you know, when people back in the day, I said that Roman Reigns is going to get the John Cena push, you know, that's pretty legendary because people had no idea why I said that at the time. You know, they didn't wrestle like each other. This is before, you know, WWE put the Jets behind Roman Reigns. Carmelo Hayes looks like one of those guys that would be like a top leader of WWE. There's just something about his look and style, I think, that would surpass Trick Williams. But I will tell you this. I think Trick Williams is going to have a tremendous career on the main roster. I am all in on Trick Williams. But you see, like Carmelo Hayes, I think Carmelo Hayes is better as a heel. But Trick Williams absolutely is better as a heel. They have Carmelo Hayes right now more of a babyface. And I don't think it's working as good as when he was chasing the title as a heel more than anything else. But, you know, they're two different players, but I am really, really big on Trick Williams. Thank you for that. Noob, my thoughts on Asuka's shooting on Stardom in the Japanese media. Wrestling fans on Twitter keep saying she should go back to Japan to book her better. Besides, she's in a better position in the WWE. Also, what should WWE do to make some improvements, like ditching the catchphrase, having her tell stories through video packages, or cut promos in Japan like Nakamura? Right now, I got to be honest with you, the last couple of months, I've enjoyed Asuka more than recent years. She is dressed like in street clothes more. She's more interactive on social media. She's cutting promos, you know, and saying some additional stuff. Nakamura's vignettes the last 2 weeks have been my favorite. Maybe in Nakamura's entire run on the main roster. They definitely could do that with Asuka. The thing is, though, is Asuka's having a hard time being the heel. Fans just like her so much that it is very, very difficult. She could pull it off, but it's very, very difficult for her to be a heel. But, you know, I am really digging what she's doing right now, and I don't think you really need to change much. As far as her shooting on Stardom in the Japanese media, you know, I really don't have much to say about that because she knows Stardom better than I do, better than you do, better than anybody else. She knows that Japanese media better than me, you, or anybody else tuning in. So for Asuka to make the remarks that she did, there's got to be good reason behind it. I didn't think it was controversial. You know, I don't think her giving a little bit of criticism really was a big deal. And honestly, it didn't turn into like a major incident. You know, just Asuka expressed her views on, you know, aspects of Stardom and you know, certain aspects of the media. And, you know, that's her right. I think, you know, I don't think it's really a big deal, to be honest with you. Plus, Asuka's not looking to get like a lot of heat on her, especially while she's on WWE. People saying that she should go back to Japan is asinine because people, especially in the United States, don't watch Japanese wrestling all that much. New Japan can't even get 60,000 viewers a week on average. They did 70 last week, which is, I think, their highest in recent memory. But imagine struggling to even get 70,000 viewers. And then you got to bring it to Japan where 95% of the American audience is not going to watch those matches. We've seen so much of Asuka already. Even if she goes back and she goes back as Kana, if she changes the look a little bit, you know, I don't think that's going to suddenly put Mercedes Moné, when she did the New Japan stint, it didn't get as much eyes on her than anybody expected. Nowhere near it. None. Very, very little. So I don't criticize anybody for making that opinion, but I disagree with it. All right, shout out to YouTube uploader. DT, first time commenter here. He rediscovered me about a year ago after losing track with the TV tracks and Epic Sports channels. Good to see that I'm still kicking after 26 years. His question in kayfabe, what would be the tougher feat to pull off? Winning the Elimination Chamber from number one. Wait, winning the Elimination Chamber from number one or winning the Rumble? Oh, okay, which is harder to pull off? Winning the Chamber from being number one or winning the Royal Rumble from being number one? He's heard me say a few times that I want Cody to win the Royal Rumble, but he thinks Cody should win the Chamber. It's more prestigious for Cody to win the Rumble, but he feels that it would make Cody look more gritty if he won the Chamber. I'll be honest with you. I agree with the gritty aspect by winning the Chamber, but he beat Brock Lesnar 2-1. He went toe-to-toe with Brock Lesnar, and it was believable. Winning the Chamber is a battle, but nobody talks about the Chamber anywhere close compared to the Rumble. Royal Rumbles are like the top, people use the top four, like WWE events here, the top four. SummerSlam, Survivor Series, Royal Rumble, WrestleMania. When you look back on it, Cody being number one and winning the Rumble means he's got to be in the match for over an hour. The Chamber is more physically brutal, but the Royal Rumble, to me, is, I think, the bigger feat. But I understand what you're saying as far as the toughness, but when you get through Brock Lesnar, I mean, there's really not much of a tougher battle unless you start having 2-on-1, 3-on-1, which seems to be happening a little bit with the Judgment Day. So, Nero Faye, he knows I don't follow soccer much, but I probably know there's a huge movement of players out of Europe and into the big money of Saudi Arabia. The only exception was Messi, who chose Inter Miami. What do I think of the phenomenon of Saudi Arabia buying all the big players out of European soccer? I don't think it's that big of a deal. Now, yes, I don't follow soccer pretty much at all. I mean, unless Italy is making a run. And I'm sorry to say that, but that's just the truth. But you know what? With Japan and baseball, you know, there's been times in my lifetime where, you know, baseball teams in Japan were trying to woo American players to play overseas. You would get a player here and there, and there was always Major League Baseball players that would go to Japan because they think that they would get a better opportunity, or maybe they're just not, you know, cutting it as good in major leagues. So they think Japan, you know, they get a easier ride. Money could be better. But look, Saudi Arabia opening up the purse. You know, I mean, if you're a soccer player and Saudi Arabia offers you a lot more money than you can make somewhere else, I mean, especially if you have a family, you know, you got responsibilities, it's very, very difficult to turn that down. You look at the world of pro wrestling. I mean, whether people like it or not, the only reason why Shawn Michaels came out of retirement is not because the fans were asking for it for years. It's because Saudi Arabia paid him a lot of money. But I also can't blame him. Shawn Michaels has a family. That money sets his kids even better for their lifetime. So Saudi Arabia wooing soccer players, you know, hey, you know, that's Saudi Arabia. I mean, they're wooing those players. Those players are accepting it. You know, if it was you or me, you know, unless we have like a dire hatred for Saudi Arabia, we probably would take the money too. Havili, DT, thanks for answering my questions about Haku, but he meant, in my opinion, why did the WWE not bring him back for the reunion show and the Legend documentary? You know, I used to love Haku. I enjoyed even when he teamed up with Andre the Giant. The Faces of Fear in WCW was tremendous. Even in 01, when WCW closed its doors and he came back for a short period of time as Haku, you know, instead of Meng when he went to WWE again. I enjoyed it all. The thing is, though, is, and I hate to say this, but for the contemporary wrestling fan, Haku Meng has been out of wrestling too long. It's almost like the Warlord. It's almost like the Barbarian. Like, a majority of fans out there don't care all that much. And that's not a knock on Haku. It shouldn't be looked at in disappointment. It's just time has gone by a little bit too long for Meng. And he's not one of those that the crowd would lose their shit, you know, if he, you know, came out for an appearance. I mean, he would get the polite applause, and for people who did follow him, it would be very, very cool to see him again. I mean, I've seen him, you know, in events recently and some photos. I know what he looks like, and I know, you know, he's doing well. But, you know, his time has passed. Even, you know, in the legend standpoint as far as WWE goes. That doesn't mean he's not going to appear down the line, but it's not a top priority for WWE. James Campbell, any news on Carlito since he's been signed? We haven't seen him yet. So possibly he's an agent instead of in-ring talent. No, Carlito will be brought in when the time is right. Right now, with the LWO, and that was the big rumor that he was going to be part of the LWO, right now they're building the storyline with Santos Escobar and Rey Mysterio. You know, we don't know if Santos will ultimately turn on Rey. I don't think that's going to happen. It could happen. But I think, you know, and Kevin and I did payback predictions earlier in the week. And, you know, we both pretty much said if Santos Escobar turns on Rey Mysterio, that's the end of the LWO. Because Rey, you know, with his career, you know, the LWO sells merchandise. It's nostalgia. It's a tribute to Eddie. There's a lot of reasons why they're doing the LWO. But just having Rey, Zelina, and Joaquin Wilde and Cruz del Toro, that's not enough. Unless Carlito somehow gets in there. And I think he would be a good fit, especially with his work with Puerto Rico. He's in crazy good shape. You know, let's not forget, Carlito was, you know, made an appearance in WWE a couple of years ago. You know, so, you know, it's not like we haven't seen him, but he'll be in soon. I mean, unless WWE changes their mind, which I don't think they will, but I think you'll see Carlito soon. Kevon Lewis, if Cody Rhodes never left AEW, what do I think he would be doing right now? And if he never came back to WWE, who would be in his position? Who would be in his position? Oh, God. I mean, just look at the top talent in WWE. You know, take your pick. I mean, would they have? I think there's a possibility Drew McIntyre would have won a Clash at the Castle last year. I don't think this Bloodline storyline would have continued the way it did with the titles on Roman. He could have still feuded with the Usos, but I think his reign would have ended a little bit sooner. Listen, Gunther down the line is going to be heavyweight champion. Seth could have ultimately dethroned Roman by now. Drew could have dethroned Roman. There's so many different scenarios. I don't think there would have been a year-long build for somebody to take the title off of Roman like Cody. Especially when you think of finishing the story and the whole Dusty aspect of it. That's the reason why this is going long. Dusty, it took years to finish the story. Cody, it's going to take a little over a year, but you wouldn't have to do that scenario if Cody didn't come in. And if Cody would have been in AEW, you know, I think by now they would have removed that stipulation that he can never compete for the heavyweight title. I think Cody would have won the championship by now. As far as what he would be doing at this present time, no, there's no way of knowing. There's so many chains of events that would need to have gone down. He could have feuded with, you know, tons of people. You know, you can't just, you know, go back in time, put him in there and see, you know, what this person would have gotten this opportunity, this person. But I think by now he would have been champion, though. Blazing Bolts, how do I introduce Constipated Hobbs on TV? I don't know if you mean WWE TV or just have him come out as a constipated character. Listen, when he has that look of anger on his face, it's almost funny. You know, he's an intimidating motherfucker. just to say it bluntly. You know, I'm like that rapper. You're a big motherfucker. I am a huge fan of Powerhouse Hobbs. And I'm kind of baffled that 3 years later, people are saying, oh, he's going to be a future star. Why with 3 years? And they're still jerking him around. You look at Wardlow, and you got to be baffled about what's going on with Wardlow, although I think he's going to be back very, very shortly. I really believe that. If Hobbs signed with WWE right now, I don't think he needs to go to NXT. I think that guy going to the main roster would kind of, and I'm only saying this because of the physiques, but I could see him, you know, similar to when they brought in Mark Henry back in the day. Not sure. Look, Mark Henry had a little bit of a, you know, Olympic background, world strongest, well, not Olympic, but world strongest man, you know, the strongman competitions. But Powerhouse Hobbs, you bring him in as a beast. I think you could have easily inserted him in the Royal Rumble. Maybe he gets into it with Brock or somebody else, and you just start him off. I also think he needs a mouthpiece and not someone like a QT Marshall. Tuxedo Earth, during the days of Raw's War, the show was split between Raw and the War Zone. Why was that the case? Because of the 9 o'clock hour. They used to do a little bit more at the 9 o'clock hour, and they viewed it as two different television shows. When we used to have ratings, even though we would do hour one and hour two, as far as Nielsen went, it was considered two different television shows. That's why they even had two different intros, if you remember. But that's why they did that. Thoughts on the pilot episode of SmackDown? At the time, you know, people thought that it was a nice idea, and it felt more of like a tribute to The Rock because he would always say, we lay the SmackDown. The first episode, if I remember correctly, the ratings were terrible. I don't think this is my opinion. When SmackDown came around and debuted, I think a lot of people felt, do we really need another show? It took a little while for SmackDown to catch on. But as far as the pilot episode, I mean, we all watched it, but it wasn't something like we set our VCRs or we set our TiVos at the time, like, oh, I got to save this for historic purposes. No, it just felt like a different show. I mean, remember, we had Jacked Metal, Sunday Night Heat. There was a lot of little shows that WWE was doing. So I don't think a lot of people took it, you know, as a big deal at that time. I mean, if you go to Wayback Machine and go back to when SmackDown debuted and look at some of the wrestling news sites that are still around, wasn't big hype about it. Wasn't countdowns or anything like that. Shawn Michaels was Mr. WrestleMania. Who do I think is Mr. SummerSlam? Wow. This is not a cop-out. I say nobody. SummerSlam over the years has been divided up, you know, very, very, like it hasn't been heavily in favor of one person or another. I mean, Roman may have dominated a lot of recent SummerSlams. Brock could have dominated a lot of recent SummerSlams, but it wasn't focused. You know, like you look at SummerSlam, and listen, there's been some SummerSlams with WWE. I don't want to say they weren't good, but it felt like just another WWE pay-per-view, a premium live event. There is no individual that was outshining everywhere else where they would cut a promo and say, you know, I'm Mr. SummerSlam. Just because you have an annual event doesn't mean that one individual person represents that event. Who's Mr. Survivor Series, you know? Who is Mr. King of the Ring? You know, King of the Ring might not be a good example, but no, there is no Mr. SummerSlam. And who is or was Mrs. WrestleMania? Nobody. I mean, even though we've had in recent years, you know, women getting a much bigger opportunity on WrestleMania, it's been very, very evenly split. Sasha has done a lot at Mania. Charlotte has done a lot at Mania. Asuka has done a lot at Mania. Becky Lynch, Ronda, a year or two, but not really in the win side. There is none. James is asking, what do I believe more? If Batista had not gotten injured in early 06, he would have faced Mysterio and led to a heel turn, or the WWE would have followed through with potentially having a match with The Undertaker that happened at WrestleMania 23, at 22 instead. I think Batista would have still turned heel and faced Mysterio. I remember at that time doing the Blackheart Sports Entertainment Hotline. And, you know, eventually, you know, we ended up going in Minority Report and then the Don, Tony, and Kevin Castle show. That was right around that time where we were transitioning. I might have even been doing Minority Report and the Black Hearts at that time. And I remember clearly people wanting to see Batista beat the shit out of Rey Mysterio. We were Rey fans, but we wanted to see that dynamic of Batista beating the crap out of him. JS, if Cody never went back to WWE, who do I think would have been the one to beat Roman? Well, we talked about that a little bit earlier. I think, you know, it's a toss-up. Seth Rollins, Drew McIntyre, but there definitely would not have been a year-long storyline to lead to the Roman loss. Thank you, Kirby Baxter. Kirby, I did talk about Lacey Evans, obviously, a week and a half ago, but I think I did shout you out at that time for letting me know about that article of her opening up the coffee shop. I tell you, I'm kind of pleasantly surprised at the IWC the last 2 weeks, who have been, you know, pretty respectful towards her and wishing her well with this coffee shop. And it's not just a coffee shop. I mean, she's doing a lot of outside causes to help people in the military, mental health, helping, you know, her community. I think people are starting to realize that, yeah, she might have had some dopey views and some of her characters sucked, but, you know, she really does care and does want to give back a lot. I think some people, you know, are acknowledging that, and it's pretty cool to see. And I think some people are just happy that she's not wrestling right now, if you want to be honest. Maggie, shout out to you. What do I think they'll do with Austin Theory now that he's lost the title? Be ashamed if he gets fired like Lacey Evans. Feels bad for her. She feels bad for her that they didn't know what to do with her. But once Ric Flair got involved, it killed her momentum and it went stone dead. I don't think Ric Flair damaged her. I think the Baron Corbin, Seth Rollins, the man, that feud really just took it to the level where like, oh, that's it. That like was what broke it over the edge. You know, and then she had a chance to revive it back when they did those vignettes and we learned. You know, I mean, a lot of us knew about her military background, but not as raw and as deep as far as the battle she went through. And I think that is a point where she would have been a great inspiration for a lot of people. And then they had to turn heel instead. And people were like, we just emotionally, like, all got behind her. And then they just have her turn on the fans. I think that was just the nail in the coffin. That was the final nail in the coffin. Austin Theory, nah. They didn't use him that well since WrestleMania. That's not necessarily Austin Theory's fault. Austin Theory has so much upside. You don't kill it because of a couple of months of somewhat mediocrity. They got plenty of time to boost Austin Theory. I'm not concerned with him at all. All right. We finish this up with a few more quick ones from Avili and a bunch from Charlie Conway. First, Avili, which of Triple H's Reigns of Terror would I have changed the outcome of? Booker T, Rob Van Dam, Kane, Scott Steiner, or Kevin Nash? For me, it's easy. Booker T. I think Booker T, coming in from WCW, if they would have had him go over on Triple H, I think that would have sent a message to the fans, like, wow, WWE must really have a lot of investment and faith in Booker T. To have him go over on Triple H, that would have been... and listen, Booker T had a decent WWE career. It wasn't bad, but that would have just put Booker T on a different level. Like, holy shit, you know, he's coming in from WCW to competitor, and they have him going over on Triple H. Wow, they must really think that high of him. Scott Steiner, you know, unfortunately with the drop foot and his medical issues, I don't think he really would have benefited all that much. RVD was over. RVD really didn't need the Triple H rub either way. Kane, the same thing. Kevin Nash was way past his prime. I don't think it would have mattered all that much. If we ever got a Forbidden Door pay-per-view between WWE and New Japan, in my opinion, on the most likely opponents for Okada, which one would I choose? Randy Orton, Roman Reigns, or Seth Rollins? For me, Seth Rollins. I think Seth Rollins and Okada would have more of... I think if you brought all three guys to Japan, I think Roman, it's more spectacle. I think Randy Orton, it's more legendary. And I think Seth Rollins would be the one to put on the biggest banger where people want to see him, you know, like just wrestle his ass off. So I would go with Seth Rollins versus Okada out of the three. Favorites, unlikely partnership, I guess, out of these three, Matt Riddle, Pete Dunne, or Randy Orton, which would be my favorite unlikely partnership? Randy Orton and Matt Riddle. I like Pete Dunne. Butch, Pete Dunne. I popped when I saw him work NXT Tuesday. And by the way, I think some people have figured this out. Yeah, I originally recorded this Q&A. I recorded three quarters of it last week. And I was doing the final part today. But, you know, since I already recorded the audio and the sound is a little bit different because I have the air conditioning on and because I wanted just everything to flow, I decided to do the whole thing over. So, you know, when I say last week, you know, people understand why. But I originally had most of this recorded. But, you know, it was cool to see Pete Dunne on NXT on Tuesday. But Pete Dunne just doesn't have the promo, you know, skills. And that's not a negative on Pete Dunne. That's not his style. That's not what he's about. The crowd loves Pete Dunne, but he doesn't need to talk all that much. Matt Riddle and Randy Orton, there's that chemistry there. That's that comedy factor, the naiveness of Matt Riddle. You know, we never got to see Randy Orton turn on him. And I think Drew McIntyre has filled that spot for Randy Orton right now. Drew will beat the balls off of Matt Riddle very, very soon. So I go with Riddle and Randy. Besides Lita, who is Trish Stratus's greatest rivals? Victoria, Jazz, Molly Holly, or Mickey James? Out of those four, Mickey James. It was somewhat controversial at that time. You know, not as controversial as it is viewed now to those who did not watch wrestling at that time, or maybe were too young to experience it. But Mickey James and that obsession with Trish Stratus was very, very interesting. And Mickey James pulled it off beautifully. People thought Mickey James was a psycho. They thought she was a psycho. And then, you know, when they had that kiss moment, that, you know, a lot of people popped for that. For me, Mickey James out of all of them. So wrapping this up, Charlie Conway. Now, for everyone out there, you know, Charlie writes pretty much like a long one paragraph. And these are pretty much quick rapid fires. Most of it I understand. Some of it I don't. So if I get stuck on any of this, Charlie, please forgive me. I'm going to do my best here. All right. Thoughts if the United States defaulted on a debt ceiling? They have always defaulted with their economy. The debt is trillions, tens of trillions of dollars. They always find a way to get out of the mess. Believe it or not, you know, listen, I don't root for Trump anymore. I wouldn't vote for Trump. I'm not really a Trump fan at all anymore, and I don't support him. But I always thought that if anybody was going to tell China, you know, fuck you, we're not going to pay the debt we owe you, it would have been Trump. But we owe them so much money. If anyone out there cares or is interested, Google and see how much money China makes just on interest alone every day from the United States. Do I despise Reggie? I guess you're saying Reggie as far as the pro wrestler. No, I don't despise him. I never liked the character, the Cirque du Soleil, whatever that is. I mean, he is very talented with acrobatics, and I hear from people that he is a really, really, really nice guy in the real world. Like outside of, I'm not saying that he's a jerk on TV, but outside in the real world, people say he's just a genuinely good guy. He's like somebody you would want in your company. I'm just surprised how much time they have invested in the guy, especially, you know, when you look at his background prior to joining WWE. So, no, I don't despise him personally. I just never, you know, really got into him at all. Never liked the carry, even when he was doing scripts. I remember that first day I DM'd somebody in NXT, and they're like, yeah, pun intended, WWE's going to very quickly change the script. All right, MVP, Wade Barrett, Randy Orton, Billy Gunn's wrestling status. Well, we know Billy Gunn returned. Randy Orton, there's a lot of unknown. Wade Barrett, still doing the commentary. And MVP, expect him back on TV very, very soon. I think the big question is, will he be involved with Bobby Lashley? I don't know. I think WWE is contemplating it. Bobby Lashley, why is he not wrestling? I mean, why is he not wrestling? Which portion of Superstorm Sandy is secret? Is secret. My dad's roof story. If Payne is similar to Rollins and others, which portion of Superstorm Sandy is secret? Dad's roof story is if Payne. Okay, I get the dad's roof story. My father fell off a roof a couple of years ago. I know on Patreon people saw some of the photos of him in a hospital. No, my dad's vertebrae are crushed, and it has to be, the only way it could be repaired is pretty much almost injecting cement in his spine. It is similar to what Vince McMahon just underwent. Seth Rollins has vertebrae issues, but not to the level of what Hogan had or Vince had or my dad. As far as Superstorm Sandy, things being secret, I don't know of anything like that. My favorite music period, is it the 1990s? Probably. Probably. I mean, I love the 80s with the dance music, but the 90s, we had electronic music go to the next level. Techno was a little bit more advanced. You know, you didn't have just the vintage drum machines. They got much more creative. I loved hip house. Could Endeavor deal fall through? No. That deal will be done in the next couple of weeks. It's pretty much done. It ain't, nothing's going to screw that up. Sarah Lee, summer, winter. Sarah Lee, no idea what you're talking about. I don't know if you're talking about the cake or the wrestler. Summer, winter, beverages, lemonade. Tammy situation. Tammy pleaded no contest to the charges. We should find out her sentencing date. And plus, we also got to make sure that the court accepts her plea. You know, and I'm pretty sure they will. Like I said a couple of weeks ago, the DA doesn't offer a deal unless the family of the victim is aware of it and the court is aware of it as well. The DA does not negotiate a deal, agree to a deal, and then the judge says, no, we're not going to accept it. If Tammy was an issue in jail or if additional info came out, you know, and then the judge felt that, you know, that it shouldn't be accepted or it should be rejected, that's a different story. But no, that plea is going to stick. We'll see how much jail time. Like I said, I think it's going to be 12 to 16 years. I like lemonade, but I'm on keto, so I don't have any sugar. Why is the Elks Lodge, why is it not practical in summer? Because it smells. There's no air condition, as far as I remember. I mean, maybe they've changed it since, but that building smelled horrible in the summertime. How would Impact in the Bully Ray situation unfolded if Kevin and I did go to Florida, go in the ring and confront him alone? It would have never happened. Even if Kevin and I went to Florida, even if we said, yeah, we're going to come down to Florida, I think Bully Ray would have said, you idiots. You really believed that we were going to confront you in the ring? You're a nobody. I don't think that ever would have ended up. And I'm glad that it didn't lead to a confrontation. In hindsight, you know, I stand by my criticism, but I think I probably was a little bit of a jerk as well. George Michael or Wham, which do songs sink in me more? I'm nothing personal against George Michael or the group Wham. I just never liked it because back in the 80s, every hour you would hear their music and it got really annoying. CM Punk absent on Dynamite, does it involve the media scrum? Sort of. They want to keep him away from the Elite, the Young Bucks, Hangman Page, their friends. There are other wrestlers that don't want to be around Punk either. Is Trump responsible for January 6th? I don't know. He definitely didn't help it. I think he thought that people were just going to, like, protest and, you know, just make a statement that, you know, the election is fixed, this and that. I don't think he ever expected what happened inside that building that day. I think he just didn't give a shit. And as president, you got to give a shit. I think Trump's biggest mistake with January 6th, because he was voted out, I think Trump was like, I don't give a shit. Let them do what they let them burn the fucking building down. And you can't do that as a president. No matter how you feel, you can't do that. That's my opinion. 4 a.m. phone calls, I don't know what you mean. He would say WCW, ECW money issues, are they similar? No. Paul Heyman spent so much money and was very, very irresponsible with bills. WCW just tanked because of the WWE competition and because of a lot of issues with the company. All right, we're going to wrap this up because there's a lot here. And yeah, we'll save the rest of it for the next show. But just to wrap this up here, which way would I memorialize the 9/11 site? I have no idea. There's already a 9/11 memorial. I wouldn't change it. Which way Dakota Kai factors in damage control? Would she take Bayley's side or Io Sky? I think at the end, I think Io Sky and Dakota Kai stay together. I think Dakota Kai will stay with Io Sky. Bayley, I think when it's time for her to split away from them, she will be on her own. CM Punk, media scrum, unresolved incident, explain the Florida meeting while the anniversary looms. Well, it was simple. Before CM Punk came back, he met with Chris Jericho, he met with Tony Khan, the lawyers were involved, and they ironed out a lot of issues. Which is the Italian bread sauce? Regular marinara sauce. Would I send someone New Park pizza or the stuff on the menu? New Park pizza is only good for regular pizza. We're going to leave it at that. So we'll do the rest. Actually, you know what? We're at 57 minutes. Let's do one more minute. Why not? The JonBenet incident, my theories, I think a family member killed her. Family member was obsessed with her, or maybe like a local offender in the neighborhood. I don't know. I mean, it's just a disgusting, you know, tragedy. He's stating that Eddie partly might be the reason why Chris Benoit became depressed and ultimately committed his crime. I have no idea. None of us were there that day. All right, my friends, I'm out of here. I'm going to go enjoy my vacation. I will be gone from September 1st to September 9th, but don't forget Tuesday, September 5th, the latest history episode will still drop. So if you're into them, definitely check it out. My next episode live will be Sunday night, September 10th, for the sit-down. So it is youtube.com/DonTony if you've never checked out the channel before. And, you know, set a reminder. Live Sunday night, September 10th, I will be online at 8:05 p.m. Eastern. There'll be a lot to talk about, everyone. I'm sure there'll be a lot more developing with the CM Punk Jack Perry situation. All Out would have gone down. I'm still holding out hope that CM Punk does appear. Check out my Wednesday Night Dynamite for August 30th to hear my discussion there. I think I'm the only person that actually thinks that they might be able to salvage All Out with CM Punk. There's a lot of things that we're going to talk about. Payback would have gone down. Will the Judgment Day hold all the gold? Yada, 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 yada. My friends, thank you as always for the support. Have a good week. I will see you all again and talk to you all again very, very soon. Ciao.
Yes. That was cool. Yeah.